You're listening to BQN. Assimilate the audio.
Engage.
78 years have passed since the days of the original USS Enterprise. Now a new galaxy starship has been designed.
Transporter Chief, beam our listeners aboard. Welcome to Galaxy Class, a Star Trek Next Generation podcast on BQN. I am your host, Counselor Amy Nelson. And today I am flying solo yet again, which actually is a nice thing because now I get to finish my writer's guide, part two. You'll remember from the first episode where we got to talk about the Star Trek format, the script style, how believable is the story and stories that do not work that they said they didn't want to do. And then we reviewed the series characters, including Picard, Riker, LaForge, Worf, Beverly Crusher, Troy, Data, and Guinan. So for this part, we are going to look at the USS Enterprise and then end with the Star Trek universe.
This is the captain. Senior officers will report to my ready room immediately.
The USS Enterprise, NCC 1701-D. And in case anyone was unsure, this is my favorite starship. It says, the fifth starship to carry the name Enterprise, twice the length of the original starship, and thus approximately eight times the interior volume. As a side note, I think I should do a little Amy's math moment in case you're not sure why twice the length would be approximately eight times the interior volume, which does go into the episode The Loss that I love, talking about dimensions. But I will have to save that for a math moment. Let's continue on with it saying, she retains much the same symmetry, which includes an engineering module with twin nacelles and, of course, a great saucer-shaped command module. See page two. Ooh. However, it is now designed to be home in a very literal sense to over 1,000 persons. Gone is the metallic sterility of the original ship, the reason being that the last century or so has seen a form of technological progress, which 24th century poets call technology unchained, which means that things are smaller, faster, more powerful, and very much centered on improving the quality of life. The living and working areas of the Enterprise reflect our new emphasis on quality of life by having a lighter, brighter, and more comfortable feeling everywhere. That's a little something maybe our new shows could adopt. They're getting darker and darker. The Starship's duties areas are no longer cluttered with the same profusions of gauges, instruments, and control buttons. Instead, not only the bridge, but all other parts of the vessel feature black panels which by touch, voice, or wave of the hand over a sensor will become information displays. If one wants to manipulate either that information or some starship mechanism, touch buttons can be displayed at the same time. Now, on page two, remember how it said to see page two? It has a copy of the Paramount Pictures lot covered or surrounded with the streets of Melrose Avenue, Van Ness Avenue, and Gower Street. And within that block covers with an overlay the Enterprise D. And it says the exact size of the Starship Enterprise compared with the 55-acre studio lot of Paramount Pictures. Woo! That's a big starship. All right, next section is community and family life. This starship is much more fully a home away from home than any of the earlier Enterprises. As humanity probes deeper and deeper into space, with missions 20 years or longer becoming the norm, Starfleet has begun encouraging crew members to share the space exploration adventure together as a family group and space community members. Most 21st century humans believe that life should be lived, not postponed. Ooh, that is a very interesting philosophy. How would your life be different if you were living it and not postponing it? The previous decades of space exploration have underscored for humanity the odd lesson that people need people for both mental and physical health, and Starfleet today encourages its people to participate in both family and community life, as well as other agreeable forms of human bonding. Although non-crew spouses and children are rarely seen in the command and other duty areas of the vessel, the sophistication of starships now includes all varieties of single and group family quarters, various levels of school and study facilities, entertainment, sports and other recreation forms, and contests, electronic and other, of a thousand kinds. Money no longer exists. There are whole new standards of value. Replicator technology can make almost anything one needs. Okay, now we're going to go over the standing sets. So the first one we're talking about is the main bridge. Because of this Starship's level of automation, the bridge on the Enterprise looks very different from the one of the original series. Gone is the need for officers to report to work in what seems a giant cockpit, lined with rows of duty stations studded with clusters of instrumentation and controls. Much of the same kinds of things happen here as in the old bridge, but with less emphasis on the mechanics of steering the ship. It is a place where the starship officers with other aboard or away responsibilities can meet, check out information, make plans, etc. Who actually drives the Enterprise? The job of the starship command and control is handled by two bridge duty officers at positions known as CON and OPS. CON, for vessel control and navigation, usually manned by a supernumerary ensign, male or female. OPS, vessel operations, including engineering and life support. Positions usually manned by data. Occasionally, the job will be handled by a supernumerary. So that is very interesting. I always got them confused and I didn't know what CON and OPS meant, and now I do. Control for navigation and operations, engineering, and life support. So CON and OPS, very nice. And data sits at OPS. This is good to know. From the moment the starship's destination is selected and the journey begun, every detail of the voyage is guided and monitored by sophisticated 21st century sensor computer combinations. Routine emergencies are sensed and analyzed with countermeasures already underway long before human help is possible or even desirable. You know, I was sort of thinking that, like, when NASA sends up, you know, shuttles and spacecraft and like the launches from Kennedy Space Center in Florida. But then as soon as the launch is over, it gets handed over to the Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas. So very interesting, CON and OPS sort of has that similarity. Like, you've got Wesley entering in the coordinates, and then Data, once that's done, controls the rest of it. I like it. And again, that's just my headcanon. Okay, so we're going to continue with the layout of the main bridge set. The command area of our main bridge is a semicircle of control seats where the captain and his next in command and advisors are located. Just ahead of this are two forward stations, OPS and CON positions. When either station is vacated by a regular character, it is promptly filled by supernumerary officers who will be referred to by the nicknames of those stations. All right. The forward part of the main bridge is a large wall-size viewer. The main viewer is usually on and will dominate the bridge that the action of the original framed view screen could never do. The rear of the bridge has a raised semicircular area separate from the command area by a railing, which is also a set of console stations. This is tactical console. At this position, Worf, plus any necessary assistants, are responsible for weaponry, defensive devices, shields, etc., plus ship's internal security. The rear wall of the bridge is an additional set of duty stations called aft consoles. These five stations represent functions which will also be ordinarily unsupervised unless called for by a story situation. From left to right, facing aft, there are science number one, used by researchers, science officers, mission specialists, and the like. Science number two, additional console to allow researchers to interact with each other. Mission operations, used to monitor the routine activities of away teams. Environment, monitors the ship's life support systems, including inertia control and artificial gravity. And engineering, this is a double-sized major bridge station which includes control of matter and antimatter engines. It is the center of Geordi's engineering functions when he is on the bridge. It is capable of more than other aft consoles. No one ever sits here except Geordi. On the stage left side of the bridge are two turbolifts and a door leading to the captain's ready room. On the right side of the bridge is a door leading to the bridge head and washroom, a door leading to the observation lounge, and a turbolift which takes you directly to the battle bridge. The observation lounge. Just behind the main bridge is a large conference room lined with a huge windows facing rearward and giving a spectacular view. Captain's ready room. On the left side of the main bridge, facing forward, is a door leading to the captain's ready room. It contains captain's private head and washroom. The ready room is intended for a private office for the captain, offering both a confidential and convenient place to work and rest, but it serves a second and equally important dramatic function. It can be used for personal and private conversations. Turbolift. The turbolift allows our crew members to travel vertically and horizontally to any part of the Enterprise. The interior is a comfortable, relatively spacious cabin, 8 feet in diameter. To use the turbolift, a crew member simply enters the compartment and speaks his or her destination aloud. Example, sick bay or bridge. The ship's computer will instantly compute the most direct route and send the turbolift to the exit nearest the desired destination. Because the ship's computer is constantly monitoring the daily routines of our people, there will be many times when it will know exactly where to deliver the turbolift's passengers without their even having to say. But if it does need instructions, it will ask for them. 10 forward. A dramatic set located on deck 10, forward, where the star clusters of the Milky Way seem to be rushing in and under huge window ports. It is also called 10-4, a place. In the 20th century, it would have been called a bar and lounge and does serve similar purposes on our starship, except for the fact that the drug alcohol, C2H5OH, is no longer consumed by humans. However, 10 Forward treats the same kinds of needs, i.e. place to physically relax, conditions where judgment can be relaxed, where reality and dreams mix, where varied beliefs and performance are accepted rather than tested. One thing that helps make this possible in 10-4 is a substance called synthahol, which acts much like alcohol when consumed, but with the effects can be dismissed from one's consciousness at will. Ooh, that's pretty fancy. In 10-4, one often will see a glass lifted in the toast to the Ferengi, which acknowledges the fact that these troublesome aliens were the first to produce synthahol. This was largely due to the fact that the super capitalistic little Ferengi are so fearful of being taken advantage of in business deals that they spent the enormous effort required to find an alcohol-like pleasure which could be shrugged off during bargaining. Oh my gosh, I did not know that! That the Ferengi were the first to produce synthahol. Oh, wow, that's pretty cool. But 10 Forward offers more than just that. It is not a duty station, but a place where the crew can interact with their friends or meet new ones. We will see non-uniformed people there, but they're usually be crew members rather than family members or passengers who have similar facilities available. Another plus here on the deck is varieties of drinks and foods taken from the best in the entire quadrant of the galaxy. Now and then we'll see something being served that looks rather spectacular. 10 Forward is presided over by Guinan, an unusual alien female whose presence perfectly complements what 10-4 does for our starship crew. The holodeck. Developed during the first season of Star Trek TNG, the invention of the holodeck on the new Enterprise led to highly entertaining episodes. It also played a part in Star Trek The Next Generation, winning the prestigious Peabody Award for Television Excellence, the first time that a new dramatic series had accomplished that. On first view, the holodeck appears to be simple and very large, empty set, until its computer magic happens. Then, depending on what has been programmed in, the holodeck becomes any setting that exists in the starship's vast library memory banks. For example, the holodeck in past episodes has included a snow trip to the Alps, Captain Picard playing a private eye in San Francisco in the 1940s, Riker's encounter in New Orleans with the all-too-sexy unreal-slash-real woman, and even a return by Captain Picard to Paris as it was when he was young, a young officer beginning Starfleet service. If the holodeck has a flaw, it may be that it is so rich in story possibilities that the Star Trek producers must limit its use to 3 or 4 times a season in order to keep the subject matter of episodes as broad and varied as the series format deserves. In the opening pilot episode, the holodeck created a parkland location. It included trees and bushes, large and small, a running stream, flowers, shaded glens, all of which looked and felt perfectly real. As a matter of fact, they were real. Every bit as real as our crew members are after having been beamed down from the starship to planet location. Much of the same process happens in creating the parkland trees, for example. It is based on the science fact that matter and energy are interchangeable. In creating the parkland, the pattern of the tree are supplied by the ship's memory banks. A person beamed down to a planet supplies his own pattern, of course. The necessary amount of energy is converted into the matter needed by the tree pattern. The result is a perfect living tree, as precise in every detail as a crew member has been created out of the pattern and energy of the starship's transporter device. True, it was obvious in the pilot episode's parkland scene that there were distant trees and hills visible, which were far beyond what would be the limit of the holodeck set as we had previously seen. But no problem, since it was then demonstrated that those were more distant parkland vistas were simply three-dimensional projections of the parkland backgrounds done with 21st century realism. The important thing was that the mood and feeling of the place was captured. Even in our 20th century, computer games are programmed to appear as real as possible, and no doubt every coming decade will see them improve in realism. Sickbay. As in the original series, but vastly improved, the 3-room complex, including Dr. Crusher's office, a set of diagnostic beds with complete medical monitoring, and a state-of-the-art medical research facility. Corridors. Again, as seen in the original series, but without the same battleship sterility. The new quarters are wider and more friendly looking, and as elsewhere, will include vegetation. Yes, I remember seeing those crazy 80s, you know, fake plants that every person in their home had one. Oh my gosh. Okay, that's too funny. Next, transporter rooms. There are several transporter rooms throughout the vessel. The one we will use most frequently is an updated version of the original transporter room, and as before, a transporter chief stands at a separate console opposite the transporter platform. Main engineering. Our engine room contains a huge matter-antimatter blender. It is located near the base of the main module of the ship. Personal quarters. Each person on the Enterprise has personal quarters of his/her own. These quarters are much more spacious and livable than we have seen in the past. It is possible that one wall of the personal quarters may be a holographic window, much like the holodeck, pronounced holodecks. Each person's quarters will reflect his or her own background and taste. This will be standard set, redressed as necessary. Okay, so I didn't know about this holographic window, and that I haven't really seen it change. So that's interesting to see that in the writer's guide. Jeffrey's tubes, an angled shaft containing electrical conduits and light fiber cables. The Jeffrey's tube is large enough for a human being to crawl through. Jeffrey's tubes provide direct access to various parts of the ship's control mechanisms and computer monitoring systems. Shuttlecraft. The Enterprise shuttlecraft are 28 feet long, 18 feet wide, and 9 feet high. They are comfortable landing vehicles for travel between a ship and a planet when the transporter is not available or practical to use. The interior of the shuttle can seat 8 passengers and 2 operators comfortably. The passenger seating would be removable to convert to a cargo or ambulance shuttle. They also have interplanetary capabilities, but as a speed of only warp 1. Battle Bridge. Note, this is not a standing set and costs money to reconstruct. In extreme emergency situations, the saucer section of the Enterprise detaches, saucer SEP, from the warp drive section of the ship in order to seek safety, enabling the captain and minimum crew to face the danger. Control of the warp section is maintained from the battle bridge, a much smaller auxiliary bridge as compared to the main bridge. Like the main bridge, there is a captain's ready room adjacent to the battle bridge. Next, let's talk about the ship's computer. Enterprise NCC-1701-D is controlled by the most sophisticated computer system ever installed in a starship. It has access to the entire library of recorded human knowledge and can present any desired information almost instantly upon request. The computer can be accessed through any console. Indeed, any ship's workstation can be reprogrammed to be exactly the kind of console needed for a specific task. Information can be displayed on any screen in a ship. Access to the computer is not controlled by the consoles. It is controlled by individual personal clearances. Ooh, I like that. The computer speaks with a pleasant, non-emotional female voice. Intelligent and articulate conversations are possible with this computer, and it is not uncommon to see a crew member engaged in an interactive conversation with the computer, which can behave as if it is a fully sentient being. The computer monitors the location of every individual aboard the Enterprise through his/her communicator, and it arranges all communications as necessary. Likewise, the computer automatically monitors all login, including those generated on away missions. We will see that the ship's communications computers are so intelligent, they may be addressed in almost any way. The terms show me or tell me are often used, but the computer is as capable as deciphering needs as any human. Those are the wake words. Show me, tell me. I like it. Our computer can also provide a wide variety of entertainment. Play me is frequently used to request music. In this particular case, the computer might respond, please indicate the orchestra desired, or conducted by whom, or played in what hall. The computer can also be directly addressed, computer, talk to me about the history of the Ferengi Alliance. This will initiate a conversation with the computer. The computer is likely to ask, what exactly do you wish to determine? And this will initiate an inquiry into the matter. Consoles are programmable workstations. The Starship's workstations look like flat black panels until they are activated. And they light up and become interactive display screens with custom keyboards as well. A crew member simply touches the part of the display that has been programmed to be the keyboard. This allows any crew member to work at any console with a high degree of familiarity. Like when you save your Google Chrome settings, and then no matter what computer, when you log into Chrome, all your settings are there, all your tabs. Yes, I like it. I think Google needs to send Star Trek a thank you note. Communication procedures. How do we talk on the bridge? No one on the bridge needs to touch anything in order to be patched into communications. A slight upward glance, followed by the speaker giving his or her name and the person they wish to speak with, is all that's necessary, i.e., Picard to engineering. As long as a person is on the bridge, they can talk to anyone on the Enterprise, on another ship, or on another planet without touching a thing. Okay, that's some serious computer listening to you all the time. Just saying. I guess that's okay in the 21st century. We're not worried about computers taking over the world. Oh, wait, we are worried about that. Now, elsewhere on the Enterprise, if one wishes to communicate with anyone else on board ship or another vessel or planet, they would touch a nearby comm panel and then give their name and the name of the person they wish to speak with, i.e. Riker to Dr. Crusher. If a comm panel is not convenient, a crew member should touch his or her insignia and respond as described above. Now, while on planets or on board other vessels, what are the communication procedures? Whenever a crew member is off the Enterprise, the person simply touches the face of the insignia. There is a confirming beep and asks for the person with whom he wishes to speak. Enterprise, this is Riker. Or, get me, Geordi. Note, to activate a comm panel or communicator, all one needs to do is touch it one time prior to speaking. They do not need to hold a finger on their communicator while speaking. One touch is sufficient. They can, however, receive a communication without touching anything. And restricted access. The ship's computer is capable of instantaneous voice identification. Should a person request information that he or she is not cleared for, the computer will respond politely, I'm sorry, you're not cleared for that information. Should a person who is cleared for that information request it while an unauthorized person is in the room, the computer will point that out as well. I want to see that. Did we ever see that? That's pretty awesome. That's pretty smart computer. Well, listeners, that is all I'm going to read to you today. I find this so fascinating and I'm looking forward to moving on to the allies and foes, its enemies. There's still more to read from the writer's guide. And I hope that you will join me next time as we finish up the writer's guide from Star Trek The Next Generation.
Incoming transmission.
We would love to hear what you thought of today's episode and hope you'll join our Facebook group, the BQN Collective. We have so much fun there. We have Apple Watch challenges. We have memes being posted and, of course, comments on all of the podcasts that we have here on the network. You can tweet your thoughts at Galaxy Class Pod or to the network on Twitter and Instagram at BQN Podcasts. Please hit the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a star rating and written review. That really helps others to find the show. Of course, I also am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and you can find me on BQN Collective.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
If you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. We are putting out more exclusive content of It's Green and Amy's Math Moments, early releases, lots to enjoy over there at patreon.com/BQN. And a huge shout out to Galaxy Class's own associate producers, Jim McMahon and Davey Willett. We are so grateful for your support, and we just love interacting with you. You will remember Jim from Trivia with Jim, who we just recently had on, and Davey has started his own wonderful Trexpert quiz, and we have some hosts of the network who will be on that as well. So we encourage you to check out Trexpert Quiz with Davey over there. In fact, just a little heads up, Joe and I might be on an upcoming episode. Who's gonna win? I know, Joe will. We would like to thank Mark White for amazing artwork each and every week. Thank you for beaming aboard the Galaxy Class. And until next time, great joy and gratitude.
Engage.